Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
It's so hard to just fathom that someone who was like a mother to my sister and I to just vanish, you know, and that's exactly what happened with her.
I don't think she left on her own. I really don't. I think she was forced to leave.
We may be grasping at straws too, because it's been 15 years and we still have no answers. A couple years ago, and I want to say probably 4 years ago, my grandmother did put up $10,000 reward, and we did get like a 5-second snippet on the 11 o'clock news at that point. It did reach the Charlotte Observer. It was ran in the paper, but that is it. The media just never picked it up.
On March 6, 2006, the fire department was called out to the Melrose Apartments in Concord, North Carolina. There was a fire inside one of the units. After the blaze was extinguished, they continued looking to see if anyone was injured or deceased inside, but they found no trace of anyone inside the apartment. They learned that the apartment was leased to 43-year-old Pamela Callahan, and no one could find Pamela anywhere. The fire was later determined to be arson. This was just the beginning of the nightmare for Pamela's family, and more than 15 years later, what happened to Pamela Callahan remains a mystery. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 316 of The Vanished, Pamela Callahan's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Concord, North Carolina is one of the largest cities in the Charlotte metropolitan area. The population in this area has exploded over the past 20 years or so. But back in 2006, when Pamela Callahan disappeared, it was a much smaller place than it is today. Pamela was living alone at the Melrose Apartments on Country Club Drive when she vanished. Shortly before the fire was set in Pamela's apartment, her family had become concerned when they were unable to reach her. But they thought that just maybe she was visiting with someone and would be back in a day or so. It wasn't until they drove by and saw firefighters on scene that they knew that something terrible must have happened. Before we get too far into the details of what transpired in early March of 2006, we're going to take a look back at Pamela's life. We spoke to Pamela's niece, Jamie, who explained how close of a bond she shared with her aunt.
So my aunt was Pamela Callahan, was her name. She is my dad's sister. And she never had any children of her own. She was a middle child and the only girl born to my grandmother and grandfather. She never had any children, but when my dad had me and then, of course, had my sister, she was very nurturing, very maternal-like. Matter of fact, she had married a gentleman. My sister and I actually lived with her for a time while we were in middle school, as she was trying to help out my grandparents because they were a good bit older. So her and I were always extremely close. I was the first grandchild. So her and I had a bond. She was very much like a mother to me because my mom and dad did not raise my sister and I. We were raised by my grandparents. And then after I had gotten out of college, her and I actually shared an apartment together for about a year. And I got married at the end of that lease. And that was about 6 months before her disappearance. That's how close we were. Like, her and I lived together right up to about 6 months before she disappeared. She loved to have fun. She loved to spoil me and my sister.
Jamie told us that since Pamela didn't have any children of her own, her nieces were like children to her. Pamela was always there to help and support them as they grew up. In the months before Pamela went missing, Jamie's sister Jennifer learned that she was pregnant, and Aunt Pamela was right there to help in any way that she could.
My sister had just found out she was expecting her first child in, I believe, November. My aunt went missing in March, so that November, my sister was scared to death. She's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And my aunt was the one who was the first one over to her house to, you know, console her and tell her everything was going to be okay. And even went as far to say, you know, Jennifer, if you, you know, don't feel comfortable with this, then I will be happy to take the baby and raise the baby. I mean, she may not have had children of her own, but her heart was, you know, it was so big and so nurturing when it came to children.
As far as relationships go, things were rocky for Pamela. She had been married once, but things didn't work out. She was always looking for that someone special to come into her life.
She had married once, and they were married for a few years. The relationship that I've seen that she had with the gentleman that she did marry, I think it started out real good. Then after that divorce, I don't even know how to really word this, she craved attention, and she craved attention from males, which a lot of times we think, you know, may have led her into the trouble that she ultimately ended up in. But she constantly craved to be someone's center of attention. I just know that, you know, this was back in the early 2000s. She was on a lot of those, they were chat lines or like phone lines on her phone. And the time that, you know, we lived together in the apartment, she would have multiple dates with, you know, different guys, or she would have these guys that she would meet on the chat line, and they were, you know, buying her anything and everything. Like, if she said she really liked this or she really wanted that, then it was like her wish, you know, was their command, and they came through for her. Other relationships that I would see her involved in, it was a lot of yelling and shouting and, you know, no, we're not seeing each other this week, or now it's, you know, oh, everything's good. So it was either good or it was bad.
Jamie explained that while Pamela was always a strong support person in her life, that Pamela had her own struggles too. Sometimes she found it difficult to stay afloat financially.
She was living by herself. So when I say she had a rough life, from the time that her divorce was final with Jerry, his name was Jerry, she did not have anything further than a high school education. So the line of work that my aunt had always done was either in daycares or fast food restaurants or convenience stores. And so we all know that it's hard to support yourself and housing and things of that on that type of income. She definitely job hopped a good bit, and she would never really rent a house herself, would maybe rent a room in a house with someone's, or like I said, her and I rented an apartment together. And it was, when our lease was up, she obtained an apartment, and I believe she had, it was co-signed by the gentleman that she was, and I use the word dating very loosely there, at that time. And that lease was about to expire, which is kind of where the whole story begins, as far as we know it. The beginning of the end, if that makes sense.
In early March of 2006, Jamie knew that her aunt's lease was about to expire, and she wasn't sure that she had anywhere to go. Jamie told us about the last time she heard from her Aunt Pamela.
I remember her calling me on a Saturday morning, and I mean, I'm not going to lie, I kind of ignored her phone calls because I felt like she was maybe asking to come back to reside with me and my new husband at the time. And I knew that that had not worked out previously. And by not worked out, it was tough for me between a new marriage and family and balancing the two and keeping both parties happy. And so I thought that that's maybe why she was calling me. And I had ignored the phone calls. And then later I answered, and it was her asking me if I knew of anyone that wanted to buy her washer and dryer. Unfortunately, I did not, so I said no. And that was the end of the conversation. That was actually the very last conversation that I had with her. I later learned that Friday, she was going to look at a one-bedroom apartment in downtown Concord. My grandmother, she wanted my grandmother to meet her there. I can only assume my grandmother was maybe going to assist with, you know, the deposit or something like that. My grandmother was unable to meet on that Friday, so she had told my aunt, I'll come by your apartment Saturday morning. I think it was to give her money. And then when my grandmother went by there Saturday morning, she never came to the door. She never answered her phone. Her car was in the parking lot. You know, we go back to, I told you my sister had just found out a little while earlier that she was pregnant. So she was, her emotions were all over the place. And she knew that my aunt was looking for somewhere to live, knew that she was going to lose her apartment. So she's like, Jamie, she didn't call Mama back. She didn't come to the door. She knew Mama was coming by there. We know that she needed this money in order to get this new place. She's like, something's just not, it doesn't seem right. So my sister was, extremely emotional that night. And so I said, okay, Jennifer, I said, I'll meet you at her apartment. Let's go to her apartment. So we met at her apartment. Her car was still there in the same parking spot. She didn't answer her phone. She didn't come to the door.
Pamela's nieces, Jennifer and Jamie, decided the next step would be to get in contact with the property managers at the apartment complex where Pamela lived. They wanted to see if they could gain entry to the apartment and see if Pamela was inside.
I don't know what the relationship was between her and the property managers at the apartment complex, as far as whether she was in good standing with her rent or not. But we decided, let's call the property managers and see if they can assist us. So we called them and told them that we were concerned about her because nobody had heard from her in quite some time. And by quite some time, I mean, 12 hours. It hadn't quite been 24 hours. And they indeed called the Concord Police Department, who came out that night and went into her apartment. Now, they did not allow me or my sister to go in because we were not on the lease. And so by law, we were not allowed to enter the apartment. They entered the apartment and did a walkthrough and said, no one's in there. Everything looks fine. There's, no sign of anything in there. So Jennifer and I just chalked it up to, well, maybe she's at Craig's for the weekend. And Craig was the gentleman who she was dating at the time and who had co-signed on the lease for her at this current apartment. We were a little concerned because her car wasn't gone with her, and we thought it was odd. Her car was still parked in the parking lot of the apartment complex. So I told Jennifer, I said, well, maybe she's gone out. Maybe, she's gone to Craig's house for the weekend. I said, so we'll just try to call her again tomorrow. Sunday came around. Nobody had called, nobody had heard from her. She wasn't answering her cell phone. It wasn't unusual for her to go stay at his house, which was about maybe a half hour away. It was in Huntersville for the weekend. So we thought, well, maybe, she's up there and we'll give it till Monday.
Jamie and Jennifer went home and hoped that there would be some word from their aunt by Monday. Jamie remembers that Pamela had just gotten a new job. She isn't sure if she had just started it prior to her disappearance or if she was going to be starting the job on Monday, March 6th. But Jamie was certain that Pamela would come back to her apartment to get ready for work on Monday morning.
If I remember correctly, she had either just started a new job or was starting a new job that Monday. Monday morning rolls around. This is March the 6th at this point. My sister had her ultrasound at the doctor's office, and it was going to be the one where we got to learn the gender of her baby. So I had gone to that doctor's appointment with her. I left that doctor's appointment, which was right down the road from my aunt's apartment complex, and was headed home. And as I was headed home, I go right past the apartment complex. I look over and my aunt's apartment's on fire. And there's fire trucks in the parking lot and there's all this commotion going on over there. So I pick up my phone. I immediately call my sister and my grandmother and I make a U-turn to head back down there. I get in the parking lot and I immediately run up to the first firefighters that I see. And I'm like, hey, that's my aunt's apartment. Well, when they heard that, I was like, come with us. We need to talk with you. I was informed that there was no one in there. She was not in the apartment. Later in the day, as the day went on, we learned that the fire had been intentionally set. Like the crime scene van and all that was out there all afternoon. I mean, this was, once I got there, I was kind of there for the rest of the day, just because at this point in time, it kind of went back to all of the events leading up to this. And now we were really concerned and we're on the edge because we were like, okay, this is not normal. Because again, her car was sitting in the parking lot and no Pam.
We also spoke to Jamie's sister, Jennifer, who has a clear memory of these events. At the time, Jennifer was looking forward to her appointment for an ultrasound that morning before they learned of the fire.
I do remember the day that my grandmother called me and she had asked me to go by and see if my aunt was home because she had went by to drop off money, which my aunt was the type that if she asked to borrow money, like she wouldn't have just not been there. Her car was there, but she wasn't there when my grandmother went to drop off that money for her. So my grandmother then called me to see if I could go by there. And I remember that night we actually called the police and they did a walkthrough and said nothing was out of place. Around this time, she was also like on the chat lines, like she was talking to many different men. And it wasn't like the internet chat rooms. They were like you would call this number and you would listen to people talk and then you would connect with them that way. Her relationships always turned out badly. And then that Monday morning, the 6th, I remember that very vividly because that was the day that we had a doctor's appointment and I found out that, you know, I was having a boy and my sister had went by her apartment and that's when she saw that it was on fire. And then ever since then, like we just don't feel like she's ever gotten the attention that she deserved.
Jennifer and Jamie were both concerned about these chat lines that Pamela used to meet people. Had she crossed paths with the wrong person? Jamie explained what she's been told by the police department about the fire that was set inside the apartment, which could potentially be important clues as to what may have happened to Pamela.
It was just hers, just her unit, and she was on the top floor, but it was just her unit. We were told that the fire was initiated in, or it was started in the bedroom, and it was a one-bedroom apartment. They said the items that started the fire were on her bed, and they were personal belongings of hers.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Jamie mentioned that there was a man named Craig that Pamela had a relationship with. He had been the person who co-signed on her apartment lease. They assumed that maybe she had been with him that weekend, when they couldn't find her before the fire. Jamie told us that the police looked into Craig.
I do know that Craig was questioned pretty intense. You know, they did some intense questioning with him. I can only assume he was not with her that weekend, and I don't know if it was because they had had a big argument, but he was not with her that weekend. None of us know who the male friend that she may have been going out with or talking to at that time, because I wasn't living with her at that time. I mean, she was exclusively on her own, but he was not with her that weekend.
Several years after Pamela disappeared, her father passed away without ever knowing what happened to his daughter. We were able to speak with Pamela's mother, Marie, and she told us that she met Craig and also spoke with him years later.
Craig, I met about, he came to the house with her about three times, and he seemed nice. Craig seemed nice. I found out that Craig had paid for her place to live up for the apartment until it come to renew it, and he would not renew the lease. I called him afterwards, and he said he had talked to her that day. I think it was on a Friday or Saturday. He had talked to her, but nothing was, you know, accomplished. But I've talked to Craig later. In fact, I talked to him, I think probably about 5 years ago, and he has not heard anything or knows anything, he says.
After the police concluded their investigation into the scene at Pamela's apartment, her family was allowed to enter in order to collect her belongings.
My grandparents were the ones to go into her apartment once the police had completed their investigation at that time. And they had to clean out her apartment items that were salvageable. I remember my grandmother saying that the dishes and stuff in her cabinets were, you know, just covered with like the remnants of the smoke and stuff. But there were some salvageable items in her apartment.
Who could have set the fire inside of Pamela's apartment and why? Had someone harmed Pamela and wanted to destroy the evidence at the scene? Or could Pamela have set it herself and planned to leave her life behind in a fiery inferno?
So it may have been closer to the holidays of that year when one of the detectives called us to say, hey, this is the time of the year that sometimes people who have gone missing may reach out to their families. It's the holidays, and wanted to give us a heads up. All this while, my sister and I are just completely blown away by these events because, I mean, you've heard me tell you, she didn't have really good and smooth life, and anything that she had that was any value, furniture, jewelry, personal like possessions, they were most likely given to her by a male friend. And those were things that she treasured, and she was really starting to like feel good about herself because she was living in this apartment by herself. She had furniture. She had a nice bedroom suit. I mean, so I couldn't see her intentionally doing something like this when she had worked so hard to get to that point in life. And so we were completely blown away by it.
For Jamie, after all of these events occurred early on in her aunt's case, things become cloudy for her. Pamela's case never garnered much media attention, and Jamie really wasn't aware of what the police department was doing to look for her aunt, or to try to figure out who had started the fire.
And after this moment in time, that's kind of when it kind of becomes like a big old blurry area, because I remember my grandmother wanting to go to the news stations and wanting to be like, you know, we have a missing person, but there really wasn't a whole lot done. I mean, other than word of mouth, and, you know, social media wasn't quite then what it is now. And so it wasn't like we could broadcast it all over social media. I think it ultimately did air on an 11 o'clock news one night, but I do remember my grandmother being extremely frustrated that she could not get my aunt's name in the story out there. And so looking back now, I often wonder if it was because the nature of it and everything was still under investigation, or why it was, or because she was a grown adult and they didn't deem her to be in any harm. It was not broadcast quite like my family had hoped. I do remember my grandparents putting up a reward for anyone with information. And to my knowledge, there weren't any tips or anything that came back from that reward.
It was during these many years with no answers and little to no communication from the police that Pamela's mother, Marie, became increasingly frustrated.
I call the police. Either they haven't heard anything, which is always they ain't never heard anything, but there for a while, it seemed like every time you call up there and ask, there was another policeman that had taken over her case. I got letters my sister wrote because we had called so much to this one policeman that was supposed to have her case that he never would call. We called him three times, and he never did call us back. And finally, she wound up writing him a letter, he signed for, to make sure he got it. So I don't know whether they didn't put any effort out there.
Many years passed after Pamela disappeared, and her family wasn't clear on what was happening with the investigation. That's when an investigator with the Concord Police Department happened to stumble upon Pamela's file and took an interest in the case. Pamela's family was thrilled to learn that someone was finally looking for answers.
Fast forward through all of those years, Labor Day of last year, so Labor Day of 2020, my grandmother calls me at work and she says, Jamie, she's now 81 years old at this time and her memory is not what it used to be either. She says, can you remind me when your Aunt Pam went missing, the dates? And I said, yes, ma'am. And I gave her those dates. And I said, Mama, why are you asking? I said, that's kind of odd. And she said, well, she said, I had a detective call me from the Concord Police Department, and he's coming down here today to talk to me. So we were like, wow. So, of course, I call my sister, and we're like, he must know something. Like, what sparked this for this to come back up? So after he leaves my grandmother's house, I immediately call her. I'm like, Mama, what did he say? And his name was Detective Henson. And he had ultimately come down to my grandmother's house to get a DNA swab. And his words to me, because he later called me, his words to me were things were a little slow and he had gone down to, I don't even know if he used the word cold case, but maybe it was the records room or something. And he came across my aunt's file. And he said, I pulled it out, he said, and I looked at it, and he says, there's a lot of meat to this case. And so he started looking through it, and that's ultimately how the ball got rolling again just this past fall. I think I learned more from Detective Henson this past fall than I had learned back when she initially went missing. So this is the Tuesday after Labor Day. He'd gone down to my grandmother's house. He'd talked with her. He got a DNA swab for her because when he started to look through my aunt's file, he made the comment, there's a lot here. This really needs some looking into again. And he started looking into it. That's when he went to the NamUs database. There was a Jane Doe out there in the NamUs database that had been found, I want to say it was 10 or 11 years ago in South Carolina and had not been identified. And I guess what was listed in that database, the characteristics, they match pretty closely with my aunt. So then he leaves my grandmother's house. He heads to my sister's house. My sister and my family are all still in Concord. I am not. I'm about an hour away. And so my sister's at work. So he calls her at work, kind of lets her know, introduces himself, lets her know that he's looking into my aunt's case again. And I think it was just more of a formal, just wanted to talk with you, and kind of told her the same thing he had told my grandmother. I get a phone call after that, and I'm at work, and we're talking. He wanted to know things about my aunt, what I last remember. One thing that stood out, apparently, with the body that was found in South Carolina was a red earring. And he wanted to know about the jewelry that she wore. And I said, you know, I remember her. Yes, she did wear jewelry. I knew that she had a pair of ruby earrings, but having not seen a picture, I would not know if that was her earring. So we felt like, okay, we might finally get some answers. Somebody has taken their time to go into this case. And when I say that Detective Henson was full steam ahead, he was full steam ahead because there were days that he and I would message each other back and forth. He would have questions of, does this name sound familiar?
Jamie was amazed by all of the things that Detective Henson was able to uncover, things that her family had never had a clue about in all of these years. We know that on the weekend before the Monday, March 6th fire, that they were unable to reach Pamela, and the police came out and did a well check, only to find no one inside her apartment. What happened that weekend was a mystery to her family for so long. Had anyone seen Pamela? Was she out looking at apartments? Had she spoken to anyone on the phone? All of these questions had gone unanswered. Jamie was shocked to learn that there was surveillance footage of her aunt on Saturday morning before she disappeared.
He went over some things that were found in the initial investigation that we weren't even aware of, to the point where that Saturday morning, she was spotted on a surveillance camera at a nearby McDonald's at a drive-thru purchasing breakfast. There was no one else in the car with her. She went through the drive-thru, and from what we can gather, she came back to her apartment because when they did the investigation after the fire, the food that she purchased at the McDonald's that morning was still sitting on that counter, not touched, uneaten. And my words to him were, well, that doesn't make sense. My aunt worked for every penny that she had, so I can't see her wasting her money and not eating breakfast. And I can't see her grabbing breakfast. And if she was leaving with someone for the day or the weekend, not taking her breakfast with her. But that was left on the counter.
The surveillance footage from the McDonald's was certainly interesting. And the food left behind at the apartment, too. Why would you go buy breakfast and then leave it behind? What did all of this suggest? Had something happened to Pamela shortly after returning home from the McDonald's? This was Saturday morning when the food was purchased, and her family was there on Saturday looking for her. What had occurred in that short time frame? The police came out and did a walkthrough and found nothing amiss. Where could Pamela have been Saturday and Sunday? And who would have come back to set the fire on Monday? Jamie told us that there was another item retrieved from the scene that could have possibly been significant, yet had never been explored until now.
There was a Hallmark card that was found during the initial investigation, and her name was written on the front of it. And it wasn't until Detective Henson reopened or, you know, went back into looking into my aunt's case that he actually is the one who opened the sealed envelope of this card, which completely blew me and my family away because we were, well, why was this card taken in as evidence? But it wasn't opened until this detective just opened it. Well, he was able to see who the card was from, and it was from a guy named Bobby, and he had gone and talked with Bobby. We found out that my aunt had had a relationship with this Bobby guy. We don't know when. We don't know the time frame. We just know that's where the card was from. He would send me a picture of this Bobby gentleman, and when he sent it to me, I was like, he didn't say it was Bobby at first. And I said, yes, I recognize him, but I don't know where I recognize him from. And actually, he was a gentleman that another estate family member, she was married to my uncle, but they're no longer married. So, but we've always still referred to her as aunt, who had dated or had, you know, just spent some time with. And that's where I recognized him from. But apparently him and my aunt also had dated or spent some time together, which during all this time, I called my cousin Samantha and said, did Aunt Pam date this Bobby guy? And she said, yes. She said, you know, there for a while, it seemed like everything mom did, which was her mom, Aunt Pam wanted to do. And they, and I had remembered, yes, they had gotten very close. They were both single. They were going out and they were doing things. And that's when Samantha informed me, and I had not even known about this until just this past year, that that's when my Aunt Teresa felt that she needed to back off and back away from my aunt because she was getting, in her words, a little too crazy. So I don't know if that meant wild, but this detective, he was on it. He had already gone to talk to Bobby. He, you know, he had located him, he had talked to him.
On top of this other evidence, they were also able to take a peek at Pamela's phone records. And everything seems to point back to that Saturday before the fire as being where all traces of Pamela cease.
He was able to retrieve cell phone records, and he was able to pinpoint, you know, where the call had been made to my grandmother, or a call from my grandmother, the call from me, you know, to me on that Saturday. And then he sees where it just drops off. Initially, back in 2006, we were told her phone call records were not retrievable because she was using a prepaid wireless service. I don't know what changed that he was now able to access and retrieve this information, but he was able to access and let us know. He was asking me questions about if I remember what her cell phone looked like. And, you know, I did vaguely, and it was a flip phone. He had sent me a picture of a phone that was in a Ziploc baggie. I assumed that was in evidence. And I now don't know if that's her phone that was retrieved from her apartment or where it may have come from. You know, obviously there's a very gray area on what he can and cannot disclose to me. Because his words to me when he contacted us back in September was he was reopening. And I don't know if that was a formal reopening or if that was meaning he was really dedicating time to it, reopening my aunt's case.
Jamie isn't certain that Pamela's cell phone was ever recovered. She thinks the one that was shown to her by the detective was likely Pamela's. And she was also told that Pamela left all of her personal belongings behind. It seems as though the only thing missing from Pamela's apartment was Pamela herself.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Pamela's nieces were really interested by this new information that gave them some new avenues to explore, and that they had an investigator who seemed just as motivated as they were. But there was something else very strange and disturbing that happened in recent years, something that could possibly point to a new person of interest in Pamela's case.
I have a very good friend of mine who still resides in Concord. Her dad is a very prominent, well-known businessman in Concord at a wheel and tire store. She calls me this particular evening and she says, hey, she says, did you hear what happened to Bubba? Bubba, and his real name is Randy Edwards, but he is known to everyone in the area as Bubba, owned a towing service. And Bubba would sit at the Concord Whataburger, which is adjacent to the Cabarrus County Courthouse. Very little, small hometown burger joint. And if you were parked, like, the parking was exclusively for the restaurant customers. He would literally sit in his bright cherry red tow truck and would physically watch you if you got out of your car and went in any direction other than to eat at the restaurant. He towed your car. And he was very well known for that because I think a lot of people, you know, couldn't find parking at the courthouse and parked here and they'd come back and their cars were gone and Bubba. I don't know that he was employed by Whataburger, but he certainly serviced their parking lot for them. But he was having a relationship with this woman. The woman was, from what I've read, was wanting to call things off with him. Bubba ultimately, and has been charged and is in prison for it, ultimately killed that woman. An off-duty officer was going down through some back roads in Cabarrus County. I want to say Locust, Midland area. Seen a, like the smoldering smoke from an unoccupied house or a vacant house or rundown house. No one was in there. And went in and found this woman who had been killed and body set on fire. And he was this well-known, you know, very active in his church, businessman in the area. And I think when he had gotten word that the police were coming for him, he went behind the big old church in Concord and tried to take his own life. He was not successful in his attempt and was arrested after he recovered in the hospital. Bubba has since been charged in this murder of this woman, but I seriously remember the night that my friend Caroline called me and said, did you hear about this when all of this went down? And Caroline, you know, who was not even close to my aunt, did not even know my aunt, thought, Jamie, do you think that he knows anything about your aunt? And I said, you know, I don't know. My grandfather had three children from a previous relationship. Well, one of those daughters was an employee at the Whataburger and had been for years. So if my aunt had been visiting and was chatting with her sister, it's not, you know, unusual that she would have met Bubba or talked to him or haven't encountered him. And if he gave her any type of attention, then she latched on. I know that just knowing her. So, you know, I thought then at that time, well, maybe he had something to do with it, but now the cops have him. So if he had anything to do with it, we'll soon hear about it. He went to court and he's sitting in prison and we never heard anything more about if there were others. Caroline's dad's tire shop, she told me that she had overheard a customer back when all this was going on. Well, this isn't his first time. And so Caroline's ears really perked up. And that may have been when she gave me the phone call that night to say, do you think he may have had anything to do with it? So, of course, I was like, well, maybe. And it was a heightened sense of hope. And then, of course, it deflated because nothing ever came from it.
We wanted to learn more about this man and the murder that he committed. So we looked into it. Randy Lee Edwards, or Bubba, was charged in August of 2015 with the murder of 40-year-old Donna Marie Helms Perez, who was found murdered on July 24, 2015. In a May 10, 2019 article in the Independent Tribune, it stated that an off-duty firefighter came upon the scene after he saw smoke coming from an abandoned farmhouse. As he came around the side of the house, he thought that he saw a burning mannequin. He realized that it was a person and rushed to try to pull the log off of her burning body. The scene was very disturbing. Donna had been bludgeoned with a blunt object and stabbed. The fire had already done extensive damage to her remains, and some of those who responded became ill, and others needed time off to process what they had seen. Ultimately, they had enough physical evidence to tie back to Bubba Edwards. Donna had told others that he had threatened to kill her and was known to stalk her in his tow truck. One of the most disturbing aspects of this crime is that it appears to have been premeditated and carefully planned out. On the morning of the murder, Bubba was seen purchasing items including a tarp, chain, and lighter fluid. Then he lured Donna out to come see him by stating that he was in a better place, only to take her life hours later. When Donna was found, they were able to determine that an accelerant was used, and that Randy Edwards tended to the fire for many hours to cause that much destruction to her remains. Randy Edwards pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and is currently serving a minimum sentence of 25 years. The crime that he committed was heinous, and it does leave you wondering if Randy Edwards could be involved in other crimes as well. What could he be capable of? And what does all of this have to do with Pamela? Jamie wasn't sure if there could be a connection between this man and her aunt, but the idea of it was nagging at her. She finally decided to ask Detective Hinson if he could find anything that tied the two together.
So now we go back to Detective Hinson, and, you know, I'm like, maybe he did have something to do with it. Maybe I do need to mention this to this new detective working her case. Similarities between what happened with this woman, you know, and my aunt, there being a fire, you know, but there's no body or no signs of my aunt anywhere, are the only differences. So at the risk of sounding crazy, I reached out to Detective Hinson and said, hey, I'd really like to talk with you about something. Give me a call. Well, he called me and I said, I've really been thinking about some things this weekend and since you've reopened this case. And I said, I really would like to know. I said, there's a gentleman in Concord who owns a towing company. And he said, Bubba? And I said, yes. And he said, I'm already looking into it. And I said, okay. I said, well, I don't personally know of them, like being even acquaintances of each other, but it's not far-fetched. Concord is kind of a small little area. I mean, it's growing, but the area that people hang out in, it's kind of the same spot. And I said, but you also have phone records now. I said, any way that we could find out if the two of them maybe were in communication? And he revealed to me, and it gave me chills, and it still does, that yes, his number was on my aunt's call history. I want to say the date, he said the last communication between them two was February the 22nd. So he obviously was talking to my aunt on her phone, or she was talking to him on his phone. There was an exchange of phone calls between the two of them.
If you were shocked to hear Jamie say this, we were too. We were expecting this Bubba Edwards to be someone who lived in the area and committed a similar crime years later. Someone we could theorize that could possibly be responsible for what happened to Pamela. But we didn't expect there to be tangible proof that they knew each other. And even more damning, that they were speaking on the phone just days before Pamela disappeared and her apartment was set on fire. This really caught our attention. Jamie told us more.
Now, of course, my mind is really just thinking, I really think he has something to do with it. I really think he knows something. There's just too many similarities. Randy was, I want to say, sentenced to life in prison, and he's currently in Laurinburg, North Carolina, at a correctional facility there. His health isn't good, is what Detective Hinson told me, and I didn't know if he is in there for life, and maybe he'll talk. He said, that's just it. He said, I've got to do some background work, and I've got to get some information together to go down there and see him and have enough on me to make him want to crack. He said, because right now he's in there, his health's not good, he knows he's not getting out. So what good does it do him to tell us anything if he knows anything? And I was, okay, not what I wanted to hear, but okay. So I kind of pushed that issue a little bit more. But of course, all of this is right during COVID. So then he said there were all the restrictions about visiting the facilities due to COVID. And that's kind of when things went really cold with me and the detective.
Pamela's other niece, Jennifer, can't shake the similarities between the cases, especially knowing that there are records connecting Pamela to this man.
He was arrested for murdering a woman and burning her body. She was found in Locust, which is probably about 15 minutes outside of Concord. It has recently been found that he was in contact with my aunt. There was rumors at the time that when this woman's body was found, that this wasn't the first time that he's done this. And then we also found out that the same accelerant, which was used to burn her body because she was found burnt, is the same accelerant that was used in my aunt's apartment.
This new potential lead about Bubba Edwards is one that Jamie and Jennifer hope gets investigated further. However, things have kind of stalled. The investigator wasn't able to visit with Bubba in person due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and they don't feel like he'll be open to speaking about any possible involvement he may have had in Pamela's disappearance. Then, Jamie stopped hearing from Detective Hinson.
After December, I have not heard much from Detective Hinson anymore. I know I messaged him in December and asked if he had any updates regarding Bubba. And he said something along the lines of, these things take time. And I said, I understand. I'm, you know, extremely grateful and appreciative of the work that you've already put in. And then, like I said, that was December. I messaged him again a couple weeks ago and nothing. And that's kind of where it ends, like for the big overall picture. It's like another dead end road.
So I get it. You know, in that line of work, he may have like where he's completely swamped, or it may be where he did have a little bit of, I don't want to say downtime, but downtime, and was able to devote, you know, time to it, which is what I think he was doing in the month of October. And do I know that other things happen that he's able to address? Absolutely. Because at this point, it's been 15 years. I told him numerous times, my grandmother will be 82 at the end of this month. Her health is declining. Matter of fact, between me and my sister, my uncle and my dad, we rotate weekends down there with her. Someone has to be with her all hours of the day now. I would just love that closure for my grandmother. And that's what I told that detective. I said, I would just love to have some type of closure. But the fact that I can't even get a reply back from a text, I understood when things were hot and heavy with COVID. But now that I feel like things are returning back to semi-normal, there's no reason why they can't take the 2-hour trip to Laurinburg to maybe talk with this man.
We wanted to speak to this investigator to see what else we could possibly learn about Pamela's case. Unfortunately, our emails and voicemails were never returned. We filed a request for records and were told the following. The investigative files regarding Mrs. Callahan are not considered to be public records and may only be released as ordered by the courts. They did, however, send us the initial missing persons report, but that didn't give us any new information. While it seemed as though things were picking up with the investigation into Pamela's disappearance, we hope that this stalling is only temporary and that they're closer to finding answers. For Jamie, she still hopes that answers will come sooner than later. She wants her grandmother to have those answers and some measure of peace about what happened to her daughter so many years ago.
I hate that she's not here, you know, because when, you know, I have a mom and yes, I do talk to her, but my grandmother has always been the mother figure and my aunt was as well. And there would be many times where I just love to call her and just talk to her or, you know, let her see where I am now, you know, or I'd love to know who she would be today. I would love, my grandfather passed away, you know, 7 years ago. He left this world without an answer. And I would love to nothing more than for my grandmother to get closure on this.
So what happened to Pamela Callahan back in March of 2006? We know that she had called Jamie on Saturday morning and that Marie was supposed to meet Pamela at her apartment Saturday morning as well. But when Marie arrived, Pamela didn't answer the door. Jennifer and Jamie decided to meet at the apartment Saturday night. They called her phone. They knocked at the door, but there was no answer. Strangely, Pamela's car was parked there at the apartment. They contacted the property manager who called the Concord Police Department to do a well check. They went into Pamela's apartment but found no one inside, and nothing caused them to be concerned. Jennifer and Jamie hoped that she was just with a friend or someone she was dating and would return on Sunday or Monday at the latest. Monday rolled around and Jennifer had her ultrasound appointment, where she learned that she was having a son. What should have been a joyous day for their family quickly turned into their worst nightmare. While on the way back from the appointment, Jamie drove by Pamela's apartment to find it engulfed in flames and the fire department on scene. They were able to determine that the fire was intentionally set and started on her bed. Was this done to cover up evidence of a crime that had been committed? Perhaps a sexual assault or even murder inside Pamela's apartment? We know that the scene was examined, but we don't know what physical evidence they may have uncovered. That information was never shared with her family, and we weren't given access to any records beyond Pamela's initial missing persons report, which had been filed on Monday, March 6th, after the fire. Pamela's family didn't know much about the investigation, or if anyone was even looking into it for many, many years. Then, an investigator with the Concord Police Department took an interest in Pamela's case. He revealed to the family some of the evidence that they had uncovered, including video surveillance of Pamela at McDonald's on the morning of Saturday, March 4th. The food she purchased was found inside her apartment, untouched. It was also that morning when Marie stopped over as promised and got no response when she knocked on the door. It seems likely that something happened to Pamela on Saturday morning. We also know that she was not in the apartment Saturday night when the police did their well check. Was someone inside Pamela's apartment waiting for her when she came back from McDonald's that morning? Was she abducted from the apartment and someone later returned to start the fire and destroy evidence? We can't be certain, but all signs seem to point to something happening on Saturday morning. Who would have wanted to hurt Pamela? We were told that she had many different relationships with men over the years, and none of them seemed to end well or as Pamela would have hoped. Was someone she had previously dated unhappy with her? Could it have been someone she was seeing at the time? Or perhaps a neighbor from within the apartment complex who had their eye on her? Then you have Bubba Edwards, who we now know murdered another woman in 2015 and set her remains on fire in order to destroy evidence. Could he be responsible for what happened to Pamela? We may never know for sure. But after learning that phone records show Pamela and Bubba communicating in the days before she went missing, this certainly should be looked into further. For Pamela's family, it's been a long 15 years of waiting for some answers or resolution in her case. Today, they feel like they're closer than ever to finding the truth. They just need a few more pieces of the puzzle. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Pamela Callahan, please contact the Concord Police Department at 704-786-9155.
She went and got breakfast. She knew my grandmother was bringing money by there for her to put this deposit on the apartment. And knowing that all of this, she needed to take place, and then she was never there. So that's where we are. She was so excited when my sister told her she was pregnant. And now my nephew, he'll be 15 years old next month, and she's never seen him. My sister has a second child. You know, I have a 12-year-old, and she was like a mother figure to us, and I hate that she's not here.
You know, she may have had issues, but she was still our family. You know, she was my grandmother's only daughter, and it kills my grandmother every year on her birthday or every March, and it's just really sad. And, you know, my grandmother's getting up in age, and she needs that closure. And anything that we can do to get, like, her story out, anything we can do.
That brings us to the end of episode 316. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be bringing you an update on a case that we covered from Texas several years ago. Thanks for listening. Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker
lied. Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.